This is Peter Aylward for The Space Show. I'm here in Tibnambilla, just outside of Canberra, and I'm joined on The Space Show by Hamish Lindsay. Hamish, welcome to The Space Show.
Good, thank you, Peter.
Hamish, you're an old-time tracker. You've been around the scene for a long period of time. Do you want to give me your background, what your background is?
Yes, well, I was very lucky that I was working for AWA way back in 1960, early 60s. And they got the contract to run Carnarvon Tracking Station in Western Australia for the Gemini project. And I applied to go there, and they accepted me. And I began my training at Mushay, which is the original Mercury tracking station near Perth. And I began there in 1963. And then after training at Mushay, I went to Carnarvon, where we helped build the station as a team. And then we did the Gemini missions. And then because I'd rather be near a bigger city for my family and so on, I applied for Honeysuckle Creek, which was coming up. And I then worked at Honeysuckle Creek tracking station through the Apollo missions, and then Skylab and Deep Space. And then I left the industry in 1981 when Honeysuckle closed down.
Right. And so were you... So what was your role? You were an engineer or something?
I was a technical officer. I started off looking after the voice receivers and the time standards at Carnarvon. And then when I applied for Honeysuckle Creek, they put me into the timing and ranging. And I went to the States and did a course there, a three-month course at Dallas on the timing and ranging systems, which is in the USB section of Honeysuckle Creek, which is what we call the front end of the station, which picks up the signal and then separates it and sending it to the telemetry and computer areas. I was then promoted to a supervising technician in charge of the technical support section, where we did all the extra things that weren't involved with tracking. But during a mission, I used to go on the tracking team as what they call Tracking One, where I was responsible for pointing the antenna at the spacecraft, getting the data from the antenna to send to Goddard so that they could calculate for the next station, and also the ranging, which measured the distance to the spacecraft and the time standards. And also the brush recorders, which recorded all. That was my responsibility.
So, okay, so that was quite a big responsibility, obviously. Who were you working for at that point? Obviously, there were facilities built for the US.
No, we were... NASA ran the whole missions, but they subcontracted the tracking station roles to the Department of Supply at Australian Government, who ran the actual missions, and the teams were in Carnarvon. Actually, we did have flight control teams would come out and run the mission from the station on the ground, because in those days it was all Earth orbit. The moon was not a manned flight at that stage, and both Mercury and Gemini were Earth orbit, trying to learn how to drive a spacecraft in space. And Honeysuckle, and it was specially built with a big dish, 85-foot dish, 26-metre dish for lunar distances. That was his prime role. And there were three stations around the world. There was one at Goldstone in California and one in Madrid in Spain, and ourselves. And we were the three dishes that would hand over to each other as the Earth turned and we were tracking the spacecraft on the moon.
Well, it must have been a very exciting time, and obviously you were there at Honeysuckle Creek when Apollo 11 landed on the moon. And what were you doing at that particular time?
Yes, we had a key role. We'd had a lot of lead up to it. Of course, we had simulations, and I remember on that particular morning, I was busy doing my Tracking One jobs, and the Prime Minister arrived, and I was also the station photographer. So I got yanked off to grab my camera and get photographs of John Gorton, the Prime Minister, going around the station. And I remember the atmosphere in the building itself when I thought about it, I sort of almost had goosebumps as to what was about to happen.
And I understand at the time when they land on the moon, there was talk about when they were actually going to start their moonwalk. They started early, which brought Honeysuckle Creek into line. Did you sort of really know that was what was going to happen anyway, or what was going on?
No, because this was a real-time decision by Neil Armstrong. At the time, we were following the flight plan. There's a very detailed flight plan, which is interesting, is that they used to work to this flight plan, and in most cases, they were within a few seconds of what the flight plan, which had been worked out months before by a team led by Mr. Ron Rose. And the whole mission was planned to within a second to where everything was going to happen. And when they finished the whole mission with all the ins and outs and changes, they landed 30 seconds behind, around about 30 seconds behind the flight plan.
Wow. And obviously you would have seen the film, the Dish. Tell us about your thoughts about the film and I guess how it kind of captured what was going on, and what were your thoughts on the film itself?
Well, the film itself was, as the producers kept on telling us, this is a comedy. It's not a factual documentary. It's a comedy, and we at Honeysuckle were pretty I won't say upset about it, but we were pretty annoyed at the fact that we hardly got a mention. I think we got a mention once in the whole thing. And there were a lot of inaccuracies in it, such as the guards were walking around carrying guns, which they never did. I think they were saying... there was one accurate one, and that was they were hit by wind gusts just before they stepped out on the moon. But we were annoyed that they didn't mention that we did the actual first 7 or 8 minutes of stepping on the moon before they came and joined, because they couldn't get down to the horizon low enough. And the moon hadn't risen high enough for them to connect. And Goldstone in America and we were carrying the actual load. But Goldstone misunderstood the signal coming down and they weren't set up properly. Whereas we had a man who had been in the ABC and was more of a television expert, I guess, who knew what to do, and he had a better signal. So when the time came, the voice at Houston... looked at what was coming then, and Honeysuckle had the better picture, so they chose that until Parks came online, and then they went switched to Parks. But those first 7 or 8 minutes came and went to the world was through Honeysuckle Creek.
Fascinating. Well, we're here at Tibbinbilla. Did you actually work at all at Tibbinbilla?
Yes, I worked here for a little while and relieving somebody on the staff here. And then while I was stationed at Honeysuckle Creek, was in deep space, the director asked me, would I make the space centre here? So I designed and implemented and put together the public affairs space centre here, which is where you are now. Although when I did it, it was quite different. It's been changed since I did it. I finished in 1980. But that's when I worked here.
And did you retire in 1980? Did you go do other things?
Yes, yeah, so I ended up at the High Court as the senior technical officer there with all the lawyers of the land.
Would you say that's a highlight or lowlight of your career?
Well, it's interesting you say that because we at Honeysuckle, we're still getting together. We're still having our anniversaries together. We're keeping in contact, but I know nothing from the High Court. The people have all left, and we don't have any memories or we don't get together. So that tells you something.
I guess so. Yeah, it's an incredible community of people that are here at Honeysuckle and at Tibbinbilla. What are your thoughts on Australia, space, the future, where we've been, where we might be going?
Well, if you want an honest opinion, I find it's difficult to find a big new thing that we can do in space. We've tried, we've been to all the planets, except Pluto, of course, which is being will be investigated by the New Horizons spacecraft. But... We've gone through the early days. We were doing the first of everything. We did the first people on the moon. We did the first spacecraft through the planetary system. Now, anything that happens will happen just following what we have done. There won't be anything new. We seem to be... the shuttle seemed to have died. And as I see it, the cost is so outrageous these days that they can't justify spending those costs for the results they're going to get back. So although there'll be a few ideas and people will be trying to do things, I believe that there's a private idea to go down to Mars with a couple and go around and not land and come back again. So there's ideas, but it's also expensive. But America at the moment sort of in the doldrums. Russia seems to be trying to keep their thing going. And there's an International Space Station which is doing some good work. But basically, there's not much we can do in space from what I can see that's new until we start thinking along colonising Mars and things like that.
You have written a book. Just tell us about that. Is that book still available?
Sadly, the publishers, Springer in London, decided to reprint it. Then they changed their mind. Yes, I wrote a book called Tracking Apollo to the Moon. Now, I got very upset that all the books were coming out in Apollo. We're talking about Apollo. They didn't mention much except for flashbacks of Mercury and Gemini that preceded Apollo. And Australia never got a mention. In fact, when they made the Apollo 13 film, I contacted the producers and said, hey, we had a lot to do with rescuing this, with the signal and so on, but you ought to give us a mention. Oh, they said, you can't do that. We can't do that. Can't even put what we want to put in there, let alone put what you want in there. So the tracking stations in the Apollo 13 film didn't get a mention. So I brought this book out, which concentrated on the Australian content of all the missions. And I've included the Russians in it. And Springer did a great job publishing it. They put lots of colour pictures, there's cartoons, there's diagrams. And it tells a story from the Australian perspective. And now it's been regarded as one of the three best books ever written in Apollo. And Chris Kraft, who is the flight director and the director of the Johnson Space Center, said the Apollo 13 story is the best one he'd read.
Fascinating. It's a wonderful book. I've read it myself, and I have it. It's a brilliant publication. Final thoughts on the 40th anniversary of DSS 43 here.
DSS 43. I've clambered around that antenna. It's being revamped. It's already sort of showing its age, like I am. I think it's been a wonderful little memory here, and I've met a lot of people from the past. In my days in the space tracking business, there's still quite a few of us around, and I'm very honoured to be here. And I wish that the dish continues on and making discoveries we haven't even thought of yet.
Well, thank you, Hamish, for joining us on the Space Show. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and have a wonderful rest of the weekend.
Thanks, Peter.